Today on Off Mic, with COVID-19 cases going up in Indiana, the big debate is whether children will be back in class, and if they do, who will teach them? That's because many teachers are unsure if they will be back in the classroom. And what is it like to have COVID-19? We hear from one East Chicago woman who is still recovering from the dreaded virus. And batter up, the Cubs and Sox play this weekend, but our boys of summer are also battling COVID-19. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ. Last night, the school city of Hobart celebrated the class of 2020 with an outdoor graduation ceremony. But now the attention in Hobart and the rest of the state is whether schools will reopen to students in the fall. The recent rise of COVID-19 cases in Indiana and the rest of the nation has many parents on edge. It also has some school teachers wondering if they should return to the classroom. This debate comes as the White House is threatening to withhold federal funds to any school district that does not reopen in the fall. Joining me to talk about this simmering debate is Gleneva Dunham. Gleneva is the president of the Gary Teachers Union and president of the Indiana Federation of Teachers. Gleneva, welcome to Off Mic.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. So, Gleneva, there is so much information that is coming from the federal government, the state government, about whether schools will reopen for in-person teaching. What is the latest as you know it?
You know what? I actually was really happy when I looked at this morning's Post Tribune. It had an article. It says Holcomb defers to districts. So I was really happy to hear that now the governor of the state of Indiana is saying each district can really decide. So to me, that kind of overrides all this conversation of what Trump is talking about withholding funds. And we know that it has come to light that Trump cannot withhold funds because those are federal funds that are put out there by Congress. So, and we know that Trump does a lot of talking. We know he's the most powerful guy in the world, but still he does a lot of talking, which a lot of times comes out not being true. So I was really excited to see this article in the paper. And then I know a lot of school districts have halted their sports programs, their practices, football. I know Morton, Gary Westside did on yesterday, Calumet did. So The cases are upticking all over the country, so it's looking like people are kind of more leaning to kind of what was happening in March. Now, with Gary, the 16 superintendents of Lake County put out their plan where they did it individually, but they all, the bottom line was you could do virtual or you could do brick and mortar. That was the option they were giving to parents. I think the parents and Gary had to make a decision by today what they chose to do. But since that time, there's been more information out there. I see Lake County Health Commissioner is saying that she's like totally overwhelmed. She had 5 nurses, 2 resigned, 2 are all sick, and now she only has 1, and she gets like 200 calls a day. So I've been listening to the webinars of Dr. McCormick, our state superintendent of instruction, and she's been, I was kind of disappointed when it came out to say that depends on your locals. So when I heard that, I immediately contacted our mayor, Mayor Prince, and our health commissioner, Dr. Walker, to just be on a cell phone basis with them to let them know that if we go back in, then I would be doing a lot of calling to them. Because we all know that at the end of the day, it could be a plan on paper, but we know how that works sometimes. I was even looking at the comment made by the NBA commissioner where he said, yeah, it's a plan, but we just don't know how that's going to roll out starting July 30th. So I'm looking at that as well because, you know, sometimes sports pretty much dictate the way the country is going. So I don't know if you want me to stop and ask you something
else.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah, the president, does he seem to complicate matters? It seems like if he would just to sort of allow the states to decide what's best for them, and then the state says, we're going to allow each school district to decide. Do you think the messages that are coming out of the White House, and I'm not sure why he needs schools open so bad, but are the messages just making this situation even worse?
Well, we know it's about the economy because we know that that's what he's running on. And we are looking at the polls where it shows he's plummeting everywhere. And his whole, his whole tenure has been about the economy, which, you know, he got from Obama. But, you know, you got to give him credit. It's still going on. So that's what he's touting it on. And he said if he can get schools back open, if people can get back to work and he can take them off the unemployment rolls, then your economy goes up because people are working again. And so that's what it's all about. And we had, you know, Republican politicians to come out way ahead of this and say, you know, some people are going to have to lose their lives for the economy. So we know how some politicians are thinking about it, but as educators, you know, that's not how we think about it. So, yeah, Trump is messing everything up. Because I was just telling my husband the other day, I said, now, I don't even remember Ebola, because, you know, I assumed that President Obama handled it so, accurately and professionally that the people didn't really get caught up like we are now. You know, because, right. You know, now Trump wants the numbers for the testing. He don't want it to go to CDC. You know, so he's getting involved in everything that he doesn't even have people prepared to that knows what they're doing. You know, the Trump kids, they don't have a lot of expertise in all of this stuff that he's giving them. Mm-hmm. So he's really clouding it up because I was at Bible study and I even asked my pastor, I said, because teachers are on Facebook going nuts about, you know, some are making jokes, but I think some are serious. They say they're calling their children. They're preparing their wills. One guy put a headstone on there with his, God. You know, day of birth, day of death, reason COVID, you know, and so people are terrified. I mean, I have teachers with underlying conditions. We know that this virus is attacking, you know, brown and black people more so than, you know, other folk. And so the community that I represent, you know, Gary, you know, we're concerned about that, you know. I know this weekend they were talking about it was a lot of big events in Gary, but Mayor Prince has been really strategic in scaling back. You know, Lake County has been like 2 weeks behind everybody. I think it was Lake County, Elkhart, and Marion in Indiana. After we did our presentation on Monday, our superintendent, it was like a lot of people was like, what? What was that? What was that? It was a 33-page plan, but it wasn't really presented to its fullness. So anyway, a lot of things have changed. We've been talking. Our emergency manager is Dr. Paige McNulty. She's been talking to the mayor and the health commissioner, Roland Walker. So I have a meeting with her next week. So we're continuing to communicate about what is school actually going to look like. We put out a survey. We put out one in April. We put out another one this week asking teachers because she's seeing what people are saying on social media. Then after Portage decided to go virtual, I mean, you know, I probably got 10 copies of that letter on Facebook. Like, have you seen this? Read this. How can she decide, you know? And I was like, proud of her for taking a stand. I was just watching MSNBC where some people in Detroit got arrested for blocking the buses from bringing the kids in for summer school.
Let me ask you this, Glenieva. When this first hit back in March, obviously schools had to sort of pivot and sort of had to learn this, computer-based at-home learning on the fly. If schools were to say, okay, we're going to go back to teaching where kids stay at home and we do it by computer, do you think teachers now have a better handle that they could actually be more effective in teaching if it comes to that where students have to stay back at home to learn?
What I can say about Gary is I'm pleased to say that over the summer we purchased 4,700 Chromebooks out of Title I funds. And we also got a partnership with T-Mobile where we bought hotspots as well. Because we do know that when Gary had to come out, we were not prepared. We made the best of it. Teachers got, really creative. You know, kids had tablets and smartphones. We did a lot of paper and when the parents came to pick up their food every Monday, teachers met them at those buses and gave them at those sites and gave them packages, a pencil and paper. But we're more prepared now. We're more prepared now because we do have the when the kids register for Gary schools, they get a chance, they can check out the Chromebooks. If they need the hotspot, they can check that out too. Teachers have had training on the computers over the summer. We hired a new IT director. We did have summer school, which was virtual, which I heard was really successful. And so we are prepared, to do that better, because we know we weren't. And as I have conversations with Dr. McNulty, our emergency manager, I'm like, we have to nail it. You know, we have to do what's best for kids. You know, if we go out virtual, we have to make sure that everybody logs on every day. And I said, it's different now, because in March, we were totally locked down. You know, nobody was going anywhere. Everybody was terrified. But now it's different. It's July, and it'll be August, and people are going now. So if we do virtual, and there's a child that's not getting on, we can go to the house. You know, we have people that can go to the house and knock on the door and say, you know, why is Johnny not on? You know, he needs to be on. But in March, wasn't nobody going to anybody's door knocking on it. You know what I'm saying? Right, so I can just say for Gary, we're more prepared this time if we have to go out.
Now, I understand that a recent survey of 1,200 of your members of the Indiana chapter, American Federation of Teachers, which you are the president, found that one-third fall into a high-risk category to contract the novel coronavirus because of their age or other underlying health conditions. With that, Governor Holcomb is considering requiring the use of masks in classrooms. What do you think about that? Should masks be required for teachers and students, knowing that I know some students are just going to buckle against having to do that?
Oh, yes. So that's one thing about the 16 corporations in Lake County who decided to just kind of roll out their plan together, masks are mandatory. But I know in Southern, I have 27 locals, like I have like Martinsville and Daleville and Avon, places like that in the rural areas where they are not mandating masks. And that's where you get that apprehension and that teachers are afraid for their own health and safety. I think everybody should be mandated to wear a mask. We're hearing now what Sam's Club, Walmart, CVS, Target are mandating people wear masks. And that's what the scientists are saying. I mean, Dr. Fauci, although that, Trump's administration is trying to act like he doesn't matter, but he's been saying it the whole time. I mean, lately, he's saying that it really, and you could just understand why a mask, when I'm in a grocery store, I feel safe if I got on a mask and you got on a mask. Because I know if you sneeze, it's not coming on me. If I sneeze, it's not coming on you. And when I get out the store, I take it off. I don't drive around in my car in a mask because it's just me in my car. You know what I'm saying? But we know that the kids, I mean, even though the kids might take them off, even with Gary, they're mandated, but it's we were marking off our classrooms with a 6-foot line, and the desks are supposed to be turned one way where the kids are not looking at each other. No tables. Our primary, kindergarten, first grade, they have tables. We were going to put desks in those classes, although we haven't done that. So, you know, a lot of things are not done. And then I have to talk about the HEROES Act. The CARES Act got us started. You know, but the HEROES Act is to finish it. You know, I know Chicago was wanting plexiglass little stands in front of their students, and they were dependent on that money. Well, you know, Congress passed $3 trillion. Nancy Pelosi has been up there for a month. Mitch McConnell hasn't touched it. So now they're saying they're going to have to do something, because we know his little term, you know, he has somebody on his tail as far as re-election. So now he's trying to make a move, and Holcomb did not cut funds for K-12. And I'm just hoping I had a lot to do with us coming up there on November 19th. He promised us a raise this time around, but I don't see that. But anyway, at least he didn't cut. But right, we see what happened at Valpo University. They cut, you know, he cut higher ed 15%. He cut a lot of departments. They already laid off 200 people because they don't have the funds. So to open schools properly, we got to have the funds. The CARES Act bought some of the PPE, but it won't continue it to June. That money will run out by December. And again, with the vulnerable population of teachers, there's like I've been meeting with all of our local leaders every Wednesday with our attorney. And so he's been coming up with a lot of new acts came to be with the CARES Act. And it's the Families First Act, where there's a lot of stipulations in there about conditions that you might have that will enable you to teach from home. A lot of districts are offering both. So if you got parents who are opting to have virtual learning, so then you got teachers with those underlying conditions who get letters from their doctors, they can be that virtual teacher from home. So that's out there as well.
Leniva, let me ask you this. In the teachers that you've been speaking with, especially in Gary, do they anticipate issues? Let's say there's a mask mandate. Is there more of an issue with the younger children or the older kids in high school that, you know, you can better explain it to them? Now, whether they follow the directions is another thing, but is a concern more with the younger children than the older children?
It's a concern over the whole K through 12, because we just know, here's the thing, a plan on paper can sound good, can look good, but if you're a teacher, I was a kindergarten teacher for 31 years, you know how things happen. I call us the boots on the ground in the trenches. So we're the ones that's in the classroom with the kids. And we just know all kinds of scenarios that can come up where the kid might not have their mask on or might say they can't breathe or, you know, things like that. So it's like wide open for that. So like I'm saying, we're going to continue communications with our superintendent. We have a meeting scheduled for Monday. We're going to be talking to the mayor, the health commission. We're just going to see where it ends up. You know, we know what's on paper right now, but as we continue to see things happen, we're just going to see how it all unfolds. We have 3 weeks. A lot of school systems in Indiana don't start till the end of August. So they almost have a month, you know, 4-6 weeks to just continue to look at things and continue to have dialogue and to watch superintendents to just get bold and just come out and say, you know what, we're going to do virtual, but we're going to make sure that virtual is what the kids need to be. And it can be better than in March, because we still can have boots on the ground. We still can, because I think the whole thing from March to June was non-participation. The state mandate is 75% so you could get your funds, but then you still, that's 25% that you might be missing. But because nobody was, you know, even Child Protective Service wasn't going to houses during that, and everybody was on lockdown, but now everybody's not on lockdown, so we can get to these houses and tell these parents how important it is that your child log on, or it can be some repercussions, because we don't want to leave anybody behind. You know, our nurses, our social workers, they can work on wellness packages, you know, to every week, you know, get a wellness package out to the parent. And, you know, we'll still be, because we've been delivering food all summer, even though school was out. You know, every Monday, you get your breakfast and lunch for 5 days, you know, and if you came in Gary on those Mondays, we had like 7 or 8 sites, and those sites were packed. Parents were pulling up, and the workers were putting it in your car. And so people were getting, you know, every week it like got more and more when people really found out where the spots were and the radio station started covering that. People came to get their food. So we were making sure that our children ate.
Leniva, let me ask you this. Obviously, there's a lot of messages that are going out. People are listening to Governor Holcomb and Dr. Box on a weekly basis. But again, they're also listening to President Trump and the head of the schools for the federal government, Dr. Voss. So let me ask you this. Who do you listen to, and who should people be listening to? There's a lot of rhetoric, of course, about withholding funding and things like that. It can kind of anger you. But who are you listening to for the most up-to-date and sensible guidance as to what is going to happen for schools in Indiana?
When you talk about listening, that's like listening with your ears. I listen to everybody. I'm like, I've been on so many webinars and Zooms, and like our United Healthcare, every Friday they do a webinar about how employers should treat employees when they come in. So I've been, because, you know, knowledge is power. Information is power. I even listen to Trump. Everybody's like, why are you listening to his daily briefings when he was having that? I'm like, I got to know what he's saying, because, you know, if other people are listening to him, I might not follow what he's saying, but I'm listening to him. But the scientists is who we're listening to. We're teachers. We're listening to scientists. I believe in the scientists. Dr. Fauci, he has Googled him. He was in all the epidemics. He knows what he's talking about. So I listen to the scientists. Dr. Walker, our health commissioner, he contracted COVID over the summer. So he's been a victim of it. So I've been listening to him, Dr. Box. I've been listening to her. So really, some of my school nurses talking about how things actually will look when you're talking about a quarantine room, how we know that a lot of times we might call parents when a child is sick, but they might not be able to come get that child. So we know that we might have a sick child in the building all day. So I'm listening to the healthcare professionals. And that's what Jennifer McCormick is saying. That's why they put everything to the local health board. They was like, we're educators. We're educators. We don't know about this virus. Because even they don't know about the virus. So I'm listening to the doctors. I'm listening. My son got COVID this summer. And the first thing, he lives in Ohio. And he doesn't have a doctor yet. I call his pediatrician. And I said, what should we do? Please call him. And for his whole quarantine, he's listened to his doctor. Because I didn't know. And that was personal to me. So I've been listening to the doctor. When he got, before I let him come back into my house, I talked to the doctor. I talked to the health commissioner. Is he straight? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I've been listening to the, but like I said, I'm getting all the information because information is power. You got to get it all, but then you got to have common sense to decipher what makes sense for what you're going through. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
What makes sense for the teachers? You know, that's why we've been having our lawyer on our Wednesday call, because he has all the laws, you know, the FMLA Act, you know, the Act, Disabilities Act. There's a lot out there that teachers can use if they really can't come in, if they're really sick, you know. I mean, that's period, you know, not just with COVID, you know. So that's what we're listening to.
Well, Glenieva Dunham is the president of the Gary Teachers Union and the Indiana Federation of Teachers. Glenieva, thank you so much for being here on Off Mic today.
Thank you very much, Mike.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic with a discussion with an East Chicago woman who is recovering from COVID-19.
Indiana's reopening plan is on hold through the end of the month. By then, some schools will reopen, and Indiana's largest teachers union is asking the governor to require masks for students. I'm Matt Pelzer. Next time on All In, we'll look at the biggest statewide stories of the week, plus we'll learn about a Lafayette woman who was laid off from her job, so she started a business during a pandemic, and it's working out. Plus, Indiana's largest cities have a long way to go to improve their health and fitness rankings. Join us. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, Northwest Indiana Bureau reporter for WBEZ in Chicago. Ruth Romero was living her life just like the rest of us, getting up, going to work, and raising her family. She never thought she'd contract COVID-19. She did and lived to tell about it. I caught up with Ruth Romero earlier this week near her home in East Chicago. She was getting set to walk around an outside track with her daughter Alexandria and her two grandkids. This walk is to build up Ruth's strength and her lung capacity. Both of us, of course, are masked up, and Ruth has an oxygen tank strapped to her shoulder.
Is this your normal routine coming out here on the mornings?
Yes, we come here in the morning. She walks, takes me. This is my daughter, Alexandra.
Hi, Alexandra. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Can you walk and talk or not really?
Yeah, we can.
Does that bother you?
No, we go off and talk.
I want you to feel like winded.
No, we can do it.
All right. Your grandkids?
Yes. For a walk.
Walk over on this side. Yep.
So how long have you been doing this walk?
We started, 2 weeks ago, maybe? Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Did you ever think you'd be out here doing this?
Not like this. Not with a thing of oxygen on me.
Yeah. But considering where you were at health wise with the COVID.
Oh, no.
No.
No. I'd probably be at work right now.
What did you used to do?
I'm a cook at Ameristar Casino.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Been there for 18 years.
All right. Are they all back open?
Yeah, they're open. I said about 3 weeks ago? Yeah.
So tell me, before you were diagnosed with this COVID thing, how was your health otherwise?
It was pretty good. Yeah. It was pretty good, yes. I mean, when I got COVID, that really knocked me. I mean, it tore me up completely. Yeah. It was bad.
Did you, when you first started hearing about this COVID, what did you think of it?
Well, just like everybody's scared, you know. Well, not everybody, because some people don't believe it. But since my daughter works at the hospital, she was more cautious with coming to the house, you know, taking her shoes off outside, changing her clothes out of her uniform. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we tried to do everything the how you're supposed to, but I don't know what went wrong.
And then when did you start getting sick?
I started April 11th, right, Miha? April 11th, I went in. She told me, because she knows more about from then.
You felt sick a few days before April 11th.
What hospital did you work at?
St. Catherine's.
You a nurse?
No, I'm a pharmacy technician.
And so...
She started feeling sick, and then on the 11th, that's when she went to the hospital.
And you dropped her off, right?
No, she actually drove to the hospital. Yeah. The first time she drove to the hospital, she went to the ER. They said, we think you have it. Let us test you. And then that Monday morning, she called me and told me that she tested positive. And then by later on that night, she was already in the hospital.
What? And you couldn't have visitors or anything?
No. No, honestly, when we went to the hospital, that's when I drove myself and they followed me. The only thing I know from there is I don't remember how I got to the hospital, but I remember seeing the building. But I couldn't. They came, pulled up next to my car, and they asked me if I could walk over there, and I told them no. So they pulled me in their car, and then from there, they drove up the emergency, and they were already waiting for me because my daughter had already called them. So as soon as they seen the car, they just grabbed me, and that was it. And then all I know, 46 days, when I woke up, I was in there already. What?
23 days.
You were intubated and everything?
For 23 days intubation.
And you were like sort of in a sleep state?
Yes. Is it like what they say, coma almost?
What were you thinking? You were just sleeping?
See, I don't know what was going on. All I was doing is having dreams.
What were your dreams? First of all, wait a minute. Before I get there, what were some of the symptoms you were feeling sick-wise?
I had a headache.
Your body was hurting.
Fever. I couldn't breathe.
She couldn't breathe that Monday. She was breathing fine until that Monday, and then after that, it was just like downhill.
Yeah, because I went back. I went on the 11th, then I went back on the 13th. And from the 13th, that's when it all stood in the hospital. I mean, I didn't know what was going on with me. They knew because the doctors was giving them the information. I mean, obviously, I was out.
Yeah.
So, I didn't come, 3 weeks later?
Yeah.
3 weeks later, and then I was only able to see them through, when they called me through.
FaceTime.
Did it come on fast?
Oh. Yeah? Yes.
Fast and hard.
Yes, it hit me hard. I mean, I was in the hospital for 46 days.
Now, do you think you got it from Ameristar, somebody there, or were you working?
No. No, because they had shut the boat down already. And back in March.
Yeah.
So, no, it wasn't from there. Honestly, I don't know. The last place I remember going to was Griffith, Strax and Griffith, but I don't know.
Yeah. So then, in the hospital for 40, how many days?
46.
Right here in St. Catherine?
Yes. Yes. The doctors say I'm a miracle.
And you were in a coma like for 23 days?
Yeah. I mean, from what my daughter tells me, it's like either way it went, they were going to have to take the, what's it called?
The tube
out, because it's already been 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So he's either take it out and put a new one, but it's, you know.
Or to get her off.
Yeah, because she knows, I mean, they would keep her more. I mean, I didn't know. She knew what was going on all that whole time I was there, because the doctors would call her, or she would call every day. You know, because it's hard now. They can't go to the hospital and visit you, you know. So, Yeah, but I mean, I couldn't walk. When I woke up from it, I was like, okay, what's going on with me? I couldn't walk. I couldn't move. I couldn't pick up my arms, my hands. I couldn't talk. So it's like, it was crazy. It was scary and crazy.
And Alexandra, let me ask you this. When they were doing all these things on her and they were already saying, well, maybe we need to take the tube out, how tough was that for you? Because you didn't know what was going to happen.
No, it was scary. It was scary.
Breathe.
It was scary because I knew from the beginning that it was real serious because, you know, I talked to the doctors and and even the nurses. Everybody there was really good, though. Like, the doctors, the nurses, they were awesome. Like, I don't know how I could repay them, but even my coworkers, like, everybody was just awesome. But when my mom first went into the hospital, they talked to me, and you could hear it in their voice that it was pretty serious and that they were even kind of like, we don't know where it's going to go, you know. And the one doctor, Dr. Schweike, he was telling me how serious everything was. And he's like, you know, I'm going to do everything we're going to all do everything we can. But, you know, it's really serious. And I knew because he was honest with me. So I knew. It was tough looking at my sister, though, because my sister was living with me at the time. And, like, she was worried. So I had to, like, try to stay as strong as possible because my sister was already freaking out. And, you know, my brother lived with my dad, and I know he was worried. And, you know, I would call my dad and just talk to my dad and try to tell me that, you know, mom was going to be okay. But it was scary. It was really scary.
So when you finally came out, what were you thinking?
First of all, I was like, where am I? Where am I? Because honestly, I didn't even know I was here in East Chicago. I thought I was in Chicago, you know, until I was like, and then I couldn't talk. So it's like, what's going on? And then when I saw them on FaceTime for the first time, I was like, but it's like, you know how when you lose your voice and you're trying to get it back and you're always like, I couldn't even talk. And so it was like, what happened? Like, it was just trying to remember, and I still don't remember everything. I don't. So,
did you feel, well, your family wasn't there. Could you feel people were around you at all when you were in that deep sleep?
Well, I used to dream. I had my kids on the bed with me. My son was like little, and he was like, you know how when they sit out on the floor and they're playing with his little cars? I had drawn her on my feet and my other daughter, Julie, by my arm, and she was just holding on to me real tight. And my sisters all worked in the hospital because they were all there. I mean, well, most of them. And then my nieces worked there as nurses' aides. And
that was your dream.
Those were my dreams. Yeah, that's what I'm telling.
They don't actually work there.
No, they don't.
No,
one sister does.
But that's how. I mean, I had crazy dreams. It just had me like to the day. I still think, what do they mean? Like. It was crazy because I don't remember nothing but that. You know, and it's like anxiety kicks in because you don't have your family there after you wake up and you're like in a room for so many days. And, you know, you see the same people in and out, and you want your kids, your mom, your family there, you know, and you don't have that. That's scary. That drives you. Mm-hmm. So to deal with that and then being in the room, can't walk. Until you go to therapy, I started taking therapy in the hospital to get me to walking because I had to hold on to a walker. You know, the first steps I took were, I think, 8. But then I was like, no, I can't, you know, I gotta do this. Yeah, it was hard.
And but you're progressing now, and you're out. How long have you been out of the hospital?
Since May 28th.
May 28th.
That's when I got out.
And what do you think when you hear people talking like, this is fake or it's not real?
She obviously gets so upset with that.
But you're living it, right? I mean, it's right there. It's almost like it's an insult to you.
I was mad when people weren't taking it serious even before it got super, you know, crazy. Like, I was already like, how could these people not take this serious? Or... like, I can't believe this person said this. Like, is there's people dying. Whether you want to believe it or not, there's people dying. Like, they're saying there's people dying. And then I took it so serious that my mom got sick. I was just like, how? And people were making jokes. It's not funny. It wasn't funny before my mom got sick. It wasn't funny when she got sick. It's not funny now. Like, it's just not funny. And
East Chicago has a really high rate for COVID-19. A lot of Hispanics are getting hurt. So you're in sort of that demographic.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm telling you, it's better to be safe than sorry, because some of us don't come out. You know, and I was pretty close. And that's why the doctors say I'm a miracle. You know, they would come up to the door and say, you know, you're a miracle. They would tell the nurses, you know, she's a miracle, because they told me not too many people come out of this. You know, and I mean,
as long as
I was in there and intubated. I was intubated for 3 weeks.
And it must have really done damage to your lungs.
Yeah.
Is this going to be like forever now?
Well, the oxygen, I go back on the 22nd to the doctor. So we'll see from there if I could do the walking without the oxygen for 6 minutes to see where my level of oxygen is at. If it's above 90, then yeah, I could probably take it off. But if it's under 90, he'll probably want me to keep it till I get there. But I mean, I'm here. I'm with my kids. So I'll do whatever it takes, you know. But it's, people just need to be more cautious and take it seriously. And, you know, not only because of that, because some of us live with our parents. Some of us live with our kids, you know, our neighbors. People live in apartment buildings, and they go to parties or they go here, and they come back, they hug their mother, their father, and not knowing if that person that you were with has it. You can't see it, you know, so you don't know if you're going to get it or not. But like I said, people right now are just, like, they're like, whatever.
Are you worried at all that you could get it again?
Yeah. I mean, some doctors say, no, you have the antibodies, but you don't know. You don't know for how long.
Do you have any other underlying health conditions before this, like diabetes or anything?
No.
And that's what the doctors were happy about. Yeah. Every time I talk to a doctor, like, look, your mom doesn't have any underlying health conditions, that we have that on our side. She doesn't have high blood pressure. She doesn't have diabetes. And, you know, we're doing everything that the studies, because she was one of the first patients that was, you know, sick at St. Catharines, as sick as she was. I mean, even some of my coworkers who worked upstairs, they didn't know that was my mom until after. And they're like, we didn't think that your mom, everybody, we didn't think your mom was going to make it. We didn't think your mom was going to make it. We're so happy. We didn't want to say anything, but we're so happy she made it out, you know, because she was that sick.
Was it hard for you were you still showing up to work?
The first, I want to say the day that my mom got intubated, the first or second day I did not come in, but I was still going to work, yeah.
It must have been hard that you're at St. Catherine and your mom's up there suffering.
Yeah, it was. It was, but in a way, like, I felt better being at the hospital because at least I knew I was in the same building as her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I would call the nurses to get an update on my mom. And I would try to call them, you know, 3-4 times out of the day just because I know that they're busy. And they had a lot going on. And I didn't want to take them away from my mother either. But every time I called, they were great, like, I never had a problem with any nurse when I called. They never made me feel like I was bothering them. And then even one of the doctors, you know, Dr. Patel, he was like, I'm so sorry you can't see your mom. He's like, I really wish you could see her. You know, all of them, they were just all really great.
Well, Ruth, what's your message for people who may not be taking it seriously, not wearing a mask, anything?
I'm just saying, you know what? Take me for an example. You don't want to end up where I am, where I was. Because I was lucky. I mean, but who knows? They might not be. You might not be. So it's like, just be careful. Be careful. I mean, a party is not that serious. Going to a bar is not that serious. Wait. You know, wait. I mean, I know we got to go to the grocery store. I know we got to go, you know, do errands. That's fine. But because somebody's having a big party at the yard with a large group of people, they're not taking it seriously, and then you're going back home, you go see your mother, you go see your parents, your whoever, your relatives. You don't know if you have it. And that's how it just keeps passing on and passing on. Just, I like I said, just take it seriously. Be careful.
You feel lucky to be out here with your grandkids and your daughter walking?
Oh, yes. You know, because, like I said, when I went in, I didn't even get a chance to say bye to them. I didn't even get a chance to hug them and say, I love you. I didn't know what was happening. So if I wouldn't have came out of this, that's the last thing they would have remembered is me, them dropping me off at the hospital. And that was it.
You live right close by?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You live with her?
No, I don't. I stay with her every day almost. Yeah, yeah, there all day. Just trying to help rebuild, you know, her endurance and get her strength back up. But she's doing much better, much better. She went from not being able to go upstairs to now we're going up and down. Now we're walking around a track. She couldn't do that. So, I mean, she's getting way better.
You hopefully, maybe one day you think you might go back to work at Ameristar, or is that you worried about that because it's enclosed and it's...
Well, you know what? It's kind of scary sometimes because I think it's... I'm like, sometimes like, oh, I want to go. I want to just get out. But then when it's like, okay, well, where do you want to go? Well, I don't know. I really don't want to go nowhere. You know?
She's like, yeah, I can't wait to go out. And then I'm like, well, where do you want to go? She's like, let's go sit in the backyard.
Man, you know, when they first started talking about this COVID-19, coronavirus from China, I mean, I can't say I really even took it seriously.
Right. At the beginning, nobody thought, oh, what's, really? Like, what's going on? Because at the beginning, nobody knows nothing about it. And it's like, oh, COVID, oh, COVID. I went to work, and one of the coworkers goes, oh, there's a COVID virus. And we're like, what? And then, but nobody knew nothing about it. And then when you start seeing the news, people dying left and right, and we're like, what the?
And then you were... You've never hit the lottery, but you got this thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's next, you know, right, to hit the lottery.
Right. So, yeah, they even called me back to work, but I couldn't accept to go back to work right now because I'm still on oxygen and I work in the kitchen. So now it's like, I don't know if they're going to have a second round of calling, if I'm going to be able to go back to work, if I'm going to be left out with a job. So it just completely messes you up.
Okay, Ruth, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And that was Ruth Romero of East Chicago, Indiana. And we'll be back with more Off Mic with a discussion about baseball being back.
Hot barbecue! Let's Eat. We'll be traveling to Portage and visiting with Barks Barbecue. You can smell it now, the sweet aroma of slow-roasted goodness. Join us at The Smoker as we pull pork with Rolando Martinez and Trey Mattson from Barks Barbecue. We want you to ring the dinner bell, 769-9577, and win a gift card from Barks Barbecue from Portage. Tune in Friday at 3 o'clock as we eat Barks Barbecue on Let's Eat with Sharon Jackson and me, Chef Nick. On 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio, WLPR. Call in and join the fun. Yasu.
Hot barbecue today!
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Last night, I witnessed my first live television sporting event in months. I watched a soccer match between two teams in Mexico playing in an empty stadium. I'm not really a soccer fan, but it was nice to see anyway. And this week, we'll be seeing a couple of inter-squad, and we've seen a couple of inter-squad games with the White Sox, who are preparing for opening day a week from now. This Sunday, the Sox play against the Cubs, but when it comes to one big-name player the Sox announced, he had COVID-19. So joining me to talk about Major League Baseball season and other sports is WBEZ sports contributor Cheryl Ray Stout. Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. How about yourself?
It seems like weeks since I last talked to you. So tell us about this big announcement. You kind of had the story out there yesterday about Johan Moncada announcing that he contracted COVID-19.
Well, when the team reported 2 weeks ago today, he did not report. So antennas went up. They, you know, we didn't know what it was. It was him and Michael Kopech that didn't report, a couple other players. So when they put Johan Moncada and Jose Ruiz on the injured list, and previous to that they had said they had two players they had COVID-19, the speculation was there. But it wasn't until yesterday, after being cleared, when Johan Moncada was on the Zoom call with us yesterday afternoon, that he confirmed, yes, he did have the virus. Yes, he did have symptoms. He lost his sense of smell and taste. It did come back. So he's on the field now. But the thing is, Michael, I believe that there's some conditioning issues for him. He said he doesn't have any long-term effects, but we don't know what's going to happen.
And we should point out, for those who don't listen to sports, is Johan Moncada is a star baseball player with the Chicago White Sox. You're right. We don't know what's happening. But, Cheryl, do you get a sense that the players are starting to feel more comfortable and they think, yeah, I think we can do this if we, you know, make it as safe as possible, that they actually want to be out there and playing?
Well, just within the hour, MLB released their latest testing results. And out of over 10,000 tests that they took just within this last week, they've only had 6 cases. So that's a very low percentage. So for players, you know, that's some sort of comfort. It's just that this testing has been flawed as far as getting the results back. They've been using a lab. MLB's been using a lab that they have in Utah, and it's been delaying everything. So there's been a lot of anxiety between days, between taking the test and not getting the results. And at times, Michael, players could not go on the field because the test results weren't in. MLB has kind of helped the situation by actually opening up a lab at Rutgers University on the East Coast. So this should make things a little more smoother. We have talked every day to players on the White Sox and the Cubs constantly about this, and it is a concern, and they want this rectified. They do feel the fact that the Cubs have had no issues except for their pitching coach who had it during the shutdown. They've had no players test positive coming in, so they feel good about it. The White Sox, you know, having two players have it, sure, they're going to feel a little bit anxious about it.
And so on Sunday, there's supposed to be this sort of exhibition between the Cubs and Sox. And where is that supposed to be played at?
Sunday's game is going to be at the Sox, and then Monday's with the Cubs at Wrigley. So they each get a turn right off the bat.
Do you think they're looking forward to this, or are they all just kind of like, man, everybody is just dealing with COVID, but it's going to be nice to see actual baseball being played?
I think for the players, being on the field, it kind of takes their minds off of it once they get on the field. They've all said, we've talked to the pitchers, we've talked to the managers, we've talked, you know, to the position players on both teams. They feel when they're on the field, and especially being able to play a different opponent, they've been doing these intra-squad games, that would be more normal to them. What will not be normal, Michael, is that there will not be fans in the stand. There's only 35 media members allowed in the press box area. There is, very few numbers of workers that are allowed there. They will have a PA announcer. They will have, you know, sounds of the crowd. They will try to fill it with that. But it's going to be strange for them not to have anybody in the stand. When we've watched the intra-squad games, you know, you see the home runs being belted by Edwin Encarnacion, and, you know, it's rattling around. You know, so you got to get used to that. That's something that it's the new normal right now. And as far as fans being there beyond the next few weeks, we don't know. Right now, we're not going to see fans. And I think that's going to be interesting, Michael, to see how they can really get that energy going for games with nobody in the stands.
Here's an idea for both the Cubs and Sox. Why don't they set up some type of Zoom link where fans can log in from their homes and put a monitor on on the scoreboard or in the clubhouse to show the teams that your fan base is watching this and they're excited. They may not be in the stadium, but they're looking at it with you. And here's another thing that is both good and a concern. We do know, of course, fans aren't going to be allowed in, but some of those bars and restaurants near the stadiums, you know, there may even be fans outside listening to this and like conjugating and I don't know how they're going to do crowd control, but people are just so excited to finally see something that is not so depressing.
Well, it's interesting you said that about the fans, with a Zoom call. Jason Benetti actually on the air just the other day said, you know what, we should have the fans, and he put it out there, and I guess it's going to happen, have them send in their reaction. So I wouldn't doubt that we're going to see some reactions sent in to the broadcast team, because they're trying to feel the moment too. I mean, they're sitting in a booth. Yes, they're talking about the game, but you miss that feeling. You know, Michael, that feeling when you're in the park. And you're right, people are going to be around. You know, Sox Park is a little more difficult because, you know, you have a couple bars, but there's no way you could see the action. Wrigley Field does have an advantage. They have those open areas. They do have a lot of bars. And what's concerning to me, Michael, when I've gone down to Wrigley Field, I go there, we're completely masked. The media is masked. We have limitations. We have to have temperatures checked. There's people walking around Wrigley Field with no masks on, and that's a little concerning to me. I mean, wear a mask, social distance. Let's get this thing, taken care of.
Well, Cheryl, let me ask you this. I know the NBA is trying to start up its season again. They have this bubble down in Orlando, Walt Disney World. What are you hearing about that?
Well, there's players have opted out. They're going to get going in a few weeks. So we'll see, because players are not supposed to leave the facility, and they have, and some of them have not been have to be quarantined. They should be okay, but you don't know. We still don't know, because Florida is such a hotbed right now. The Sky is down there. The WNBA is in Bradenton. They're in the same thing. They both have bubbles. They're both supposed to start in just in a couple of weeks. So we'll see if that will be successful. That may have more success than almost any sport because there's fewer players. But the hard part is they have close contact, and that's when, if somebody is positive, it could spread easily that way. So it's a yin and a yang as far as that goes.
Sure.
Baseball has an advantage right now, but once they start traveling, Michael, that could be where things could go awry.
That's right. That's right. What are you hearing in terms of the NFL?
The NFL, they're supposed to start reporting on July 28th, but they still have some situations they have to take care of. I think that's the most difficult sport right now, because the fact is they are in close quarters. There is a lot, there's a lot more players involved. Social distancing is not going to be easy. There's some concerns that the union wants to cancel all four preseason games. They've canceled two of them, so they want to cancel all four preseason games because they want to keep backing things up. Some of the some of the collegiate divisions and conferences are moving everything to October 1st. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some movement in, especially with football, college, and the NFL. That's going to be interesting. The other sport to watch right now is going to be the NHL, because they're going to be leaving in over a week to go into their bubble in Edmonton and Toronto. So these are the sports to watch, the NBA and the NHL, as far as can they finish their seasons.
That's right. That's right. And, Cheryl, just give us a brief look at how do sports reporters, how are you guys doing your work right now? Covering all these sports, but it's also, you're also having to mind your own health.
Michael, it's been challenging. I have generally 12 Zoom calls a day from the different teams. Sometimes they coincide at the same time. When we do go to the parks, and I've gone to Blackhawks practices, I've gone to Sox Park, I've gone to Cubs Wrigley Field, and you're concerned. I mean, they've done a lot of precautions. We are masked. I wear gloves too. I have my own wipes. They have a lot of things to clean. But there's something, the unknown is difficult to deal with. But the teams are doing their best. They give us managers every day, coaches every day. They give us players every day in Zoom. So we are always getting news. I mean, even David Ross, we were talking to him yesterday, he's like, I got some news for you guys. Kyle Hendricks is going to start opening day. I know you guys need something.
That's great.
So you get those, you get some of those little pieces here and there. And they've been very good. I mean, they are very they respond to us very quickly anytime we have any questions or anything like that.
Great. Well, Cheryl, we got to leave it there because we're wrapping up. That's Cheryl Ray Stiles, WBEZ Sports Contributor. Cheryl, thank you so much for being here again on Off Mic.
Anytime, Michael.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. You can listen to this show again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.com. For me, Michael Puente, the staff, the producers here at Lakeshore Public Radio, thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend.